committee this beautiful morning. Could you call the roll?
Trustee Hill?
Here.
Trustee James?
Here.
And would you verify that the meeting notices were posted as required?
Yes, they were.
We only have one action item on our agenda this morning, which is approval of the previous minutes. Is there a motion to approve?
There's a motion to approve the minutes as read.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee James?
Yes.
And now, I think we might go out of order a little bit and give Dr. Westbrook a chance to catch her breath. So why don't we just go in reverse order. Dr. Brooks-Williams, would you give your legislative update?
Sure. Of course, the Illinois General Assembly finished its session in May on time, and we did well as far as the capital budget. We got $19.5 million to renovate the Douglas Hall for the pharmacy program, $14 million in additional capital. Of course, everyone knows about the $40 million Westside campus, but the issue with the Westside campus is that it probably will be 2 to 3 years, or perhaps 40 years, four years down the line, because the problem is that bonds have not been sold. And of course, you know, our bond rating has declined as far as the state of Illinois, so it would be difficult to sell the bonds. The other issue is that, as most of you probably read in today's paper, 60% of voters oppose a video poker, which is one of the revenue streams that is designed to support the bonding authority, as well as the owner of a big liquor establishment opposes the liquor tax. But the other problem is that for higher education, over $300 billion in bonds have been authorized, and of course, if you do the math, if you take $40 million, that leaves very little for higher education in terms of capital. And the other issue is that the Illinois Board of Higher Education is looking at shovel-ready projects. And of course, the Westside Center is so much, I mean, it's in its early stage, so it probably won't be placed on the high priority list. So again, that's probably something that's 2 to 3 years down the road, and any questions related to the Westside Center should be referred to the Capital Development Board, or IBHE, as opposed to Chicago State, because we have no information with respect to when that will really go online. As far as the operating budget, we did well. We got $614,000 for the pharmacy program. But on the other hand, we didn't do as well because we have to go back to our 2009 budget authority. But and the other drawback of the budget is that the governor cut the MAP program, which is the Monetary Assistance Program, by 50%. And for Chicago State, that means that over 3,000 students would be affected at a $3.6 million. So the strategy is that we will be working with other higher education individuals and communities to see if we can get the General Assembly to restore that money during a veto session. We're asking students to email, call, write your legislators, and also use the new media to contact legislators. And several rallies have been scheduled to bring people together to voice their opposition to the 50% cut. On September 29th, a rally will be held downtown in the State of Illinois building, organized by Illinois Board of Higher Education. And on October 9th, Loyola University will hold another student rally to galvanize students to voice their opposition. And on October 15th, during veto session, there will be a rally in Springfield to bring together the general community of higher education to oppose these cuts. So we're reaching out to everyone, asking you to help us to restore those cuts. Because for most of you, a lot of students who will be graduating next semester, they won't be able to get the money. So therefore, you know, a lot of these students, it will impact their graduation. On the substantive side, we are being overloaded by a lot of Freedom of Information requests, and we will be further overloaded because starting January, we will have to respond in 5 days as opposed to 7 days. And we don't necessarily have the additional staff to respond to all of these requests. And if we don't respond within 5 days, there will be a $5,000 penalty that we would have to pay if we don't respond. And also, as far as the ethics training, ethics officer will be expected to be trained, as well as people like myself who deal with the Open Meetings Act. But the problem is that we keep calling to request the training, but there's no staff people in place in the governor's office to provide the training. So we're keeping a paper trail to make certain that we avoid audit findings. And on the federal level, the most significant change that will affect students will be in 2011, the financial assistance, that long 100-page form that most of you are familiar with, will be shortened. Parents will be able to check it off on their income tax form. So that will hopefully encourage more students to apply for financial assistance. So those are the major things that are going on. And of course, veto session is October 14th through the 16th and the end of October. And again, the focus will be to galvanize the university community, including the Faculty Senate, UPI, and administrators who go to Springfield to help us restore the money that we might lose as a result of the cuts. Any questions?
Any questions? There being none, thank you very much. Appreciate your report. Sounds like it was a pretty productive, although the math issues are certainly very significant, and we have to do everything we can to support that for our students and the restoration of those funds. Okay, Student Affairs, Brown.
Good morning. Trustee Hill, and I'd like to welcome Mr. Devon James, the new Student Board of Trustees rep, and I would like to commend him and the new Executive Council of the Student Government Association before I begin, because I think they've already been actively involved in strengthening our student body as well as helping us at Chicago State. My report is brief. I wanted to provide two updates on two issues that we talked about in a previous meeting. Before that, though, I would like to mention that, of course, because of the transition and the change in the administration with the interim vice president leaving, I have resumed some of the responsibilities, and two highlights that I want to point out include the UPass. That was something that we left off with, and to give you an update on what has happened thus far. The UPass, as you know, was passed as a resolution by the CSU Board of Trustees. However, there are two factors that impact the implementation of the UPass program. The first factor was the fact that the contract was not submitted to CTA in order for the students to have that in place for fall of 2009. And secondly, after attending the UPass conference, we learned later that for the spring semester, the contract would have been due August 1st, which the conference was not held until the 29th of July. So with that, I provided information to the Student Government Association Executive Board to review the information and to also gather input from them, and they will have something coming out for the entire student body related to the UPass at this point.
So what has to happen to make sure that, what's the next deadline for
the next contract? Deadline will be January 1 for the fall semester, and I have provided that also to the Student Government Association along with other details pertaining to the CTA's program that has changed significantly in terms of cost and what a university needs to do for their student body to be involved. We've been in discussions about that.
Okay. So is it, what I'm hearing is that there, what does the student government body have to do?
Well, at this
about
point,
this?
I'll defer to you.
At this moment, we've been,
I myself personally have written down a survey out to get to students to actually know how they feel about, for one, the UPAS in general, about the amount of cost that it's going to be to them. Also about, you know, if this is something that the students who are taking night classes and things of that nature would want. The previous referendums that were passed with, I think, less than 20% participation of people who were able to affect. And I think that if we are going to have a resolution that's already passed through the board, that we should at least have an understanding of how we can reduce the impact of students. And there should be some data collected that would help us make an educated, you know, decision of what the board and what the university should do.
So you'll be back at some point when we have all that information.
In addition to that, I would like to just share, I'm very pleased by some of the procedural improvements that have occurred related to student services. And that includes one we have talked about, the student health insurance program at one time. And one of the things that occurred during this year's registration is that as a result of numerous changes in terms of making the delivery of our services more student-friendly, the student health insurance program process was also changed, meaning that students could get immediate credit for the health insurance program if they chose to wait out. In the past, it was a lengthy wait, about 8 weeks or so. And so this improvement, we've received a lot of feedback on that process changing, and it has been very positive. Lastly, I just wanted to highlight, there are a lot of things going on, particularly in the Division of Student Affairs and in collaboration with faculty and administrators and others. New student orientation, we were heavily involved in terms of having a town hall meeting, parents, counseling center provided workshops for parents. We're finding more and more parents are really becoming involved in the students' education. We've seen an increase in the numbers. We have a parent in action group that is actually becoming very active on campus. And that's not just for residential students, but also for our community students as well. In addition to that, we had a very successful welcome week in collaboration with the Student Government Association. Clubs and organizations were very involved. Greek Affairs Day, we saw quite a number of, we have about 50 organizations now we've recognized. So we're finding more involved in there. There are many things that are going on that I think you'll see in future reports, more detailed information. This is just from during the summer. But coming up, there are a number of activities, Constitution Day, which is required by law that we observe that and going in terms of participation and connecting that to the Academic Affairs area. Mexican Day Parade is coming up as well. The university will participate in that, I think the second time. And lastly, Spirit Day, of course, which is at the end of September, and everyone comes out to kind of fellowship, a lot of collegiality. That's a brief summary. And I'll be happy to answer questions, but I think
you
will see more detailed information in the reports.
Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question about the student health insurance program.
Yeah.
Mostly with the premium and the actual benefit to the student.
Uh-huh.
The students pay, I pay, $460 cost.
That's correct.
For the current insurance. However, I get 80% coverage if I get injured or need to see a doctor, and that's only if there's a doctor available during the 9 to 5 hours. So I have to get injured between 9 and 5 and see a doctor here who will charge me 20% on top of whatever costs associated with the injury. Not to mention, if there was something like a broken bone or something like that, I would then have to defer to Trinity Hospital, which is the nearest hospital here. And then I was informed that I would receive about 50% coverage over a $250 limit. Now, just for something as simple as, you know, taking a blood test, it'll go over $250. So why is it that the insurance provider that we are using does not cover those costs when $460 is a huge amount that the students would pay, and more than somebody at IIT would pay?
There are several questions in there. Trustee James. And I'll start by saying that the Aetna Student Health Insurance Program has been one we've had for many years. And currently, we are going out with an RFP this year to review other options. Over the last several years, as you know, healthcare costs have risen. To keep the cost low for our students in terms of premium they pay, the services that Aetna would provide were reduced. At one time, students did receive 100% coverage with the Aetna Student Health Insurance Program. Over the years, the cost per student was increased to about $1,000 per semester. As we began to look at other programs and compare, one of the things we found out is that at the other universities that have lower costs, they also have a larger number of students who reside on campus and also have other health insurance coverage, which reduced some of their rates. The second part of your question pertaining to why it currently is the way it is, we do have a mandatory student health insurance policy for those who do not have adequate coverage from another provider. Right now, as
one second. What do you consider adequate coverage?
Adequate coverage means to cover the injury and sickness if you would have an accident or something of that sort.
Okay, and before then you were mentioning how the cost is lower to other schools because they have more students who reside on campus as well as students who have health insurance already provided. Right. Now, I do know that we did discontinue the use of the Healthy Women's Card. So that, you know, previously we were allowing students who had the Healthy Women's Card to receive, to waive the premium, and now we're not allowing that. When, for a woman, she could actually get more care at just a basic health clinic for women than she could get if she was to go to the wellness center. So my question is, why then did we waive the use of the Healthy Women's Card, seeing as that is a direct benefit to the females here at this university? And there is a large, actually, if you look at the actual population here, there are more women on campus than there are men. And since it's we're just about 80% federally funded, I would find it hard to believe that these same women who qualify for such high financial aid would then not qualify for things like the Healthy Women's Card.
Let me just say that, first of all, several years ago when the Healthy Women's Card came out, actually, they provided more services at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, they only provide two benefits, I believe, and they do not cover the injury and sickness we were talking about. Mm-hmm. However, the individuals who have contacted me regarding the Healthy Women's Card, I am reviewing that matter right now as we speak. And as a matter of fact, those individuals may be able to waive this semester. You're bringing up issues that are very important, which is why going out and looking at other providers. As an example, what I have found is that in the state of Illinois, currently, there is a student health program that has just been started over the last year. And actually, any student enrolled at a college or a university can sign up for that particular health insurance. It is lower than our cost currently. However, they too have a deductible. And I think you're raising very good points about, one, quality of care, the cost of care, and the best for our students. At this point in time, only about 1,000 of the full-time students enrolled who are eligible for the program, that means 12 or more hours,
mm-hmm.
two-thirds of those wave out because they have other insurance. So what I've begun to look at, along with our coordinator for student health insurance, is whether or not this is even reasonable to have this particular program when so many students are opting out. So the issue you raised now is that since we had that 1 year extension on the health insurance program, this period of covering those students who wouldn't have anything this last year, right now as we speak, and I would love for someone from the student body, if you're not available, student government, to serve on the committee to determine whether or not we will either continue student health insurance, and if so, what type of insurance would benefit the most. But many of the issues you raised are the concerns we have, but we did not want our students to find out suddenly they had no coverage. But I am looking very closely at those students who have come and said, I have some other kind of insurance. It was waived in the past, now it's not. and that will be addressed on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
I don't have any. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your time.
Dr. Westbrook.
Again, good morning. I'll first begin with just giving some brief highlights for each of the respective units in the academic affairs area. Beginning with the College of Arts and Sciences, a detailed report is provided for you, but I would like to capture some of the highlights, given that frequently when we have these types of meetings, individuals in the audience, they're not privy to the contents. Beginning with the College of Arts and Sciences, the faculty have successfully been awarded over $9,639,000 in grants. And of this dollar amount, $3,360,708 was awarded to the Department of Social Work to provide training in evidence-based trauma practice, trauma training and support services. Trustee Hill, you may be aware that this was the particular program whereby we received a mandate from the state. Although the funding had not been approved, and given we had so many individuals that were involved in providing the social services, we received a mandate from the state that somehow we must support it. It was also given a time during the time when we had not received an approved budget. But we managed, and I'm pleased that the services were not interrupted. And talking about the Honors College, I don't think we boast enough about it. Although the retention is 85%, really the overall is 100%, in that the few students that left the Honors College, they remained at the university. So indeed, there are lessons to be learned from the practices of the Honors College, and clearly, as we begin to prepare for our focus visit, we will tap into that, to the practices within that college, as well as through other academic programs that have proven to be successful. In addition, the College of Education continues to have students to study abroad during the summer. There were five students who traveled abroad to Taiwan. And as we know, the global learning is such a pivotal point as we prepare our future teachers. The College of Health Sciences, the faculty have submitted four manuscripts, which have all been published in peer-reviewed scientific, emphasis, scientific journals, and one scheduled for publication this semester. So I'm always pleased when we can talk about the efforts of our faculty as they engage in research. College of Pharmacy, recently, 2 weeks ago, we had our White Coat Ceremony, and we coded 90 new pharmacy students. It was clearly a very exciting time, not only for parents, but especially the students. With that, and of course it's all about funding, we had over $19,000 was actually donated just to host that event. So the university did not have to provide funding for it. I'm pleased to announce information pertaining to the School of Graduate and Professional Studies. The dean and well as others have successfully received a grant for $500,000 per year through 2015. That is phenomenal. $500,000 through 2015. And what the grant will do is to enhance the education experience for both graduate and professional students within the disciplines of geography, the GIS program specifically, mathematics, and the computer science programs, as well as the biology program.
Where is this grant coming from?
Dr. Agajizi, it's a federal U.S. Department of Education. So the administrators who will participate in staffing the grant, I believe they've been hired, office space has been designated. But I guess more importantly, it's such a wonderful opportunity for our students, because at the graduate level, you know, sometimes we tend to forget about our graduate students and focus more on our undergraduate students, since that's the population that we're being held most accountable for. Library Information Services and Learning and Instruction Services, I will defer my comments to Dr. McCrank when he gives us an update on the Gwendolyn Brooks papers, and that's at the Finance Committee meeting. Enrollment Services, I'm really excited about what has transpired. Beginning in June, late June, we began to convene meetings with not only students, but also pivotal offices. And we really had some candid decisions about what's going right, what's going wrong, and we know what's going wrong, why do we continue to go that route? And as a result, we pooled our mental resources. We received the feedback from students, and we were meeting like twice a week just to figure out what can we do to enhance the delivery services during that registration period. And we thought it was also equally important to have some evidence as a result of our efforts. So there were surveys, and I have a student in my office. He's done a phenomenal job. He has compiled all of the results for the survey in the bookstore, because we wanted to not only find out what went right in the bookstore, but also in terms of the whole operation, which was under one roof in the Convocation Center. And Trustee James, maybe you can chime in if you would agree that indeed.
Yes, the you're speaking about the reader administration. That was actually something I had been asking about for a while, and to see it actually happening, although there were flaws, I was very glad and very appreciative of the effort that was put behind each department who participated in the administration and instruction in a long time.
And it was really interesting, because when you sit at the table and you hear why that something can't be done, and then you ask why not, sometimes it was just simple mechanisms that needed to be in place. So we moved the ID operation from the library over to the Convocation Center. And again, it was always to think in terms, how can we avoid the student, the runaround that we frequently hear about. The other part that I thought went well was the availability of the trolley cars, so that individuals who could not necessarily navigate the campus, that there was mobility for them. So that went well. Now, can it be improved? Most definitely. We've already convened one meeting, just for updates, to talk about what really went well, how can it even be improved, although it went well, and how do we need to tweak it so that come the spring term, when we go through this process again, we've already had our rehearsal, so no snacks. That's the goal. In addition, it's not indicated in your report, but I wanted to be on record regarding our current enrollment status. I'm pleased to announce we are up. You know, last year we had an enrollment of, 6,800 students, and we're now up, effective today, 7,238 students. So our goal is not only to increase our enrollment, but to retain them, and that's where our focus is right now. And I'll get back to that. Getting back to academic affairs, just wanted you to also know that in your packet, we were quite successful We have a summer school bridge program. We served over 219 students, and these students were involved in workshops that would really help prepare them as they enroll in their academic programs for the current fall semester. The University College program successfully processed 260 students for admission, but this was after meeting with 400 students. And so that we are all informed, when students are initially tested, you know they already come in with an ACT score as well as a GPA. But frequently students retest, sometimes because they're encouraged to do so, sometimes they select to do so. So as a result, many of the students who were initially slated, and I think there were approximately 100 that were slated for University College, they indeed remained at the university, but they were able to go through matriculation through the traditional route. So that's a wonderful thing. Effective today, we have 275 students that have officially matriculated in the University College program. We have approximately 35 students because we were not able to do some of the things that were really necessary. They will be enrolled. And we typically don't enroll students in the University College for the spring, but guess what? We will be admitting students for the spring term. And we will be providing the same services that we provided for the fall enrollment, because our goal is to make certain that students are given an opportunity if they meet the criteria for admissions. The next thing is, I indicated to you, Trustee Hill, I want to commend you for your leadership. And it's always a welcome to know that when I reach out for help, that, and I know it's not about me, that you are always so giving of your time, so that individuals know the university is scheduled for a focus visit with the Higher Learning Commission, and specifically, you know, I've already had one campus assembly. I've met with all of the deans, the department chairs, and the faculty senate, as well as I've talked with some of our board of trustees. I've established a task force, an advisory task force, that will lead the way.
Can you just back up and explain the purpose of the visit and what it is?
Okay,
the purpose of the visit is a particular issue.
The purpose of the visit is to look at one issue, and that issue being enrollment management. The reason we were asked or mandated to have this visit, a report, there have been two reports. First of all, I need to say this. Chicago State University has been accredited for 10 years. I need to put that on the record. 2003, we were given that accreditation status for 10 years. Our next accreditation visit is scheduled 2012-2013, because the Higher Learning Commission dictates that window of when we will actually have that visit. As a result of the initial status of recontinuing or continuing accreditation, we were asked, the university was asked, to submit a monitoring report in 2006. At the time when we were given the 10-year status for accreditation, the Higher Learning Commission did note that it raised some concerns regarding our enrollment. And basically, it was the declining enrollment, trying to help them understand why was the enrollment going down. In the monitoring report that was submitted in 2006, clearly, and this is not about pointing fingers at anyone, but I guess the report was not convincing enough that we had made sufficient progress in the way of meeting concerns expressed regarding enrollment management. As a result of the 2006 report, given that there didn't appear to be sufficient evidence, we were asked to provide just a progress report. And that progress report was due June 2009. Now, as a result of that progress report, clearly some of the same issues remain, and we've now been asked to participate in a focus visit that's scheduled for January, February, or March of 2010. Now, last night midnight, I was on my computer and I communicated with Karen Solomon, who serves as the vice president for the Higher Learning Commission. And Trustee Hill, you may recall that Karen Solomon is also the person who was instrumental in working with us to have the EDD program approved so that we would change our classification here at Chicago State University. So I was pleased that Karen was also on her computer. And so we were communicating via email, I guess it was really this morning. And so she has asked that I meet with her along with Dr. Watson. And it was, I was just so ecstatic about hearing that. And she didn't seem to, she thinks that given some of the things or information that I provided, that Chicago State will indeed be able to respond to some of the issues. But more importantly, helping the team understand that the population that we are being targeted for are the first time, full-time freshmen, which makes up only 5% of the total student population that we serve at this institution. So it's about, you know, educating them, and sometimes a report does not, you know, portray all of the information so that the individuals who are reading it, they are really familiar with the nuances of our institution. Secondly, I've had, it's amazing the support for this institution. Judy Irwin, who is the executive director for the Illinois Board of Higher Education, called me on Labor Day. I love you, Judy. And she too, because I had called her previously, I think it was that Friday, and to get a voice message that indicated that she was on vacation and she was at a wedding. And I felt terrible about it, but you know, we do what we have to do. And she did get back with me, and I was pleased to hear her response as well. And you know, she's basically said anything we need, she's there for us. But I wanted to be able to just give you an update on where we are with that. Specifically,
talk about
I want
some of the changes that are happening, because it's not just about the way we need to answer, obviously, the question about enrollment management. Mm-hmm. It's not just to say, well, that's just 5% of the population. Obviously, we want to help that 5% mm-hmm. as well as everybody else. And so,
well, there,
you know,
was
there a number of things in place that
okay.
I'd like to talk about.
But I need to say this because I know I'll forget if I don't say it. An advisory task force has been established, and Trustee Hill has volunteered. I want that reflected in a minute, that she will be joining us as frequently as possible when we meet each Friday at noon. But in preparation for the visit and some of the things that have occurred, regarding the focus visit, although the umbrella concern is enrollment management, there were specifically some areas of concern under that fall within that, one being leadership. The question that was raised, and it is no secret, it has happened, that there has been some leadership issues. But when I say leadership issues, I need to qualify. Specifically, they are concerned about the turnover in the supervisory capacity of enrollment services. In particular, since the 2006 report, that unit, enrollment services, has reported directly to two different provosts, an interim vice president for administration and enrollment management. And last year, to the interim vice president for student affairs and enrollment management. So not only has the title changed for in terms of the reporting structure, so here it is in less than, 3 years? We've had 4 different leaders leading that very important element or focus of the university. That's our lifeblood. And so questions were raised about it. But to respond to that, currently a search is being conducted for a vice president of enrollment management. That is all that that individual will focus on. It will not be a split assignment. All effort and energy will be placed on enrollment management. We plan to have that individual on board before the team arrives. As indicated, the search is currently going on as I speak. That's the one concern. A second concern was funding. Nowhere in the budget over the last 6 years has there been a dollar amount designated to support recruitment and marketing of the university and its programs. Not $1. All of us that were here last year, we heard how this must occur to put us on par with other universities. So guess what? When you, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to peruse your budget book, but within the budget, 2 allocations have been made. One, $250,000 has been made for specifically the enrollment component, and 2, another $250,000 has been allocated for marketing the university. So, you know, to know that we went from $0 to $500,000, I think that that will be quite impressive when the team comes. But in addition, some things have occurred since that report was even written. I know that there were several, and I don't know the numbers, 100 or 150 time slots were given on 2 different radio stations. We wanted to make certain that we focused on our Latino population, and I don't recall the name of the Latino radio station, but I know that there were about 150, they call them slots, I don't know what that, anyway, where they're actually showcasing the university. There have been some other initiatives that have been put in place that now fall under Dr. Irma Brooks Williams. And we're moving steadily. And as a result, we'll be able to show that these are not a hit and miss, that just because we're having a visit, that these are things that we put in place. But these are things that should have been in place. And sometimes, you know, it takes something like this to occur to have us to, it's the culture shock. It's the reality check that we must make things happen. Another concern that was raised that was also under the enrollment management piece, and I was pleased to hear Judy Irwin indicate, well, Sandra, if you need me to write you something, I can provide you with a letter that indicates the concern that was raised. The concern being that why does it take the board so long to approve tuition and fee increases? Well, you can't approve what we don't have approved from the state. So it's really a state issue. It is not a Chicago State University issue. So I was pleased when I shared that with Ms. Irwin, that she was willing to put something in writing and so we would have documentation in our evidence room. And then I talked about the stability of the leadership, the funding was an issue, the being able to make decisions in a timely manner, and I think I'm forgetting what's in my notes.
Well, I know that there are some new, when you talk about leadership, it's not just a single person's leadership.
Exactly.
It's obviously leadership that needs to come from across the university, especially when it comes to retention. Is that the other piece you wanted to?
Well, yes, it's a university issue, and specifically, the remaining three issues were our retention rates, recruitment initiatives, and graduation rates. And what the team said is we indicated in our report all of the wonderful things or strategies we had implemented, but we did not provide an analysis that really determines the effectiveness of what we're doing. So we're saying that these things work, but where's the evidence that supports that they work? So we have some evidence. It was amazing when those meetings, we have started convening those meetings, the amount of data that we do have and will be available to the team. So I'm sure we will have to write a focus visit report. I've been perusing the other focus visit reports for other universities, just really looking at the format and you know, what's really going to be expected of us, so we can have some preliminary plans in place. But I'll know more once I've had an opportunity to, and Dr. Watson have had an opportunity to meet with Dr. Solomon, Karen Solomon. So that concludes my report, unless you have some additional questions.
Question?
Yeah, I have a few questions. Mm-hmm. Let me figure out where I'm going to start with it. I'm sorry. One thing I noticed, I had a friend who actually was involved in the Summer Bridge program this year. And she.
And we had several. Which one?
Huh?
There were several.
Oh, the, I'm sorry. The, it was a 3-week session, I think it was in the in June, and she was doing the mathematics one.
Oh.
Okay. Since that time, I've been watching like what she's done actually in class afterwards, and she's been getting like straight A's on like all of the homework and the quiz preparations, except, you know, she had a 76 or something like that on the test that she took, the first test. And before then, I remember I spoke with you about the success that's been happening through Summer Bridge. And it gives students who have been away from math for a little while and students who just didn't quite get what they needed through, you know, their high school education, the opportunity to get kind of a
jump start.
Yeah, there we go, a jump start for the incoming term. And I wanted to know, are there opportunities for the expansion of that program as far as funding is concerned? And what would be necessary from, you know, I guess the higher administration or the Board of Trustees in order to continue the expansion of that program, as well as expanding the University College program, not so much for the students who necessarily did not meet the requirements to be admitted as a regular student,
mm-hmm.
But to give that experience to the university as a whole, to where all freshmen get the same type of nurturing and the same
freshman
type
experience,
of,
right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that the University College program offers, and then to have some information as far as what it would cost to make that available to everyone in the future.
I think that, number one, your points are well taken, and well, your questions, because that's something that we're really grappling with. Because as we begin to talk about some of the strategies that are actually used with the University College, we know that if those same strategies were systemic across all programs, that would indeed assist us. So what we're doing now is not only looking at the University College, but we've identified, I think there were like 7 programs that have more than 25 or 30 students, first-time, full-time freshmen. And we're looking at their retention rates. And those retention rates are anywhere between 75% to 100%. and looking for the commonalities. And then once we've identified, because that will really help us with our focus visit as well, but in looking at those commonalities, looking at how can we make it systemic, and then what will it cost? Now, one of the things, and I'm not sure if Trustee Hill recalls this, but one of the decisions that was made was to support this initiative. We knew that there would be probably, because of the change in the admissions criteria, that we would have more students enrolled in the University of College. But we wanted to make certain, because it's not about numbers, it's about we need to make certain that the academic support systems will be in place. As a result, the university made an investment. We hired 3 additional staff members. 3. And they only have a 1-year contract, but it is our hope that the dividends or the yield, after we look at what that retention rate is going to be and our expectation for what it's going to be, that number one, we will be able to retain those 3 individuals. And number 2, look at the possibilities of where we can pool our limited resources to maybe even enhance that population by having a few more staff on board. As you know, the state did not approve our supplemental funding like we received last year for retention and recruitment. However, the university has made a commitment and reallocated internal dollars to support this initiative because we know how vital it is for retaining and graduating our students. So, you know, I think that if we can continue along those lines, something that we currently have on the table is making it mandatory mm-hmm. that all University College participate in the summer school bridge. I think that we were not successful in implementing that policy this year because it's like with every policy, you know, you need to have conversations and you need to have people around the table to look at what are the implications. If we implement that, you know, sometimes students are not in attendance for various reasons. So will we, as a result of us implementing such a policy, in essence be, you know, turning students away? If, you know, indeed they may even be eligible. So we need to look at that, but we are seriously looking at whether or not it should be mandatory that they participate in the Summer Bridge program as opposed to being optional. Your second question?
My second question was on the PowerPoint slide from the presentation you gave for the deans and chair. For the accreditation.
Okay, you mean for you mean for the campus assembly?
Yes.
When I was okay.
Yes. You were the response to the retention strategy specifically in the weakness section. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know which of these have been addressed so far, and what is the plan to address the rest?
First of all, it needs to be cited that the weaknesses that were identified. Mm-hmm. were not identified by the commission. These were self-identified, which brings me to another point. Sometimes in our efforts, and individuals that are really familiar with accrediting bodies, specifically our programs, sometimes things are placed in a report with the intent to get further assistance. And some of the weaknesses cited by us, are they accurate? Absolutely. Do we have a recruitment plan that's been implemented? No, we do not. That's a reality. Are we implementing individual recruitment plans across the university? Yes, but we do not have a single cohesive recruitment plan. And in the job description, for although it is a university-wide issue, in the job description for the Vice President for Enrollment Management, it details this as one of the number one responsibilities once that person comes on board, mm-hmm. is to design a recruitment plan that embraces the entire university community. And when I think that that's going to be pivotal, when the team comes on board, that they can see evidence that indeed we have a recruitment plan in place. It also indicates weaknesses, lack of resources. We've addressed that already. Understaffing. I think understaffing is relative. And I think under the leadership of Dr. Watson, when decisions are made about restructuring or a new organizational chart, that the questions will be answered as to whether we need more staff or whether staff needs to be shuffled around so that we really give serious attention to this. The poor public image, that's accurate. You know, that's not a secret. But again, these are self-reported. Mm-hmm. This is not something that the team, I mean, that the Higher Learning Commission identified.
Okay. Thank you. My next question was about the, Dr. Watson briefly mentioned the separation of enrollment services and student services.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if this caused any issues with the original problem being enrollment services issues and, at the university when it regards to leadership. Will that in any way impact that by separating the two entities and therefore possibly creating new positions or a new title for someone to head student services? Or is that not a problem?
Well, I don't consider it a problem. Like any other administration, the new leader has the prerogative to organize the university in such a way that he or she believes is prudent. So number one, our focus has to be on enrollment management. It has to be. And clearly by separating the two units, it will send a message that we take it seriously. And this individual is going to be clearly focused on enrollment management. The second position, which we will have a second position, will clearly operate with the concerns and any issues programming on the student services side. A final determination has not been made or disclosed regarding what that position is going to be, and I would prefer to wait until Dr. Watson has an opportunity to disclose that.
I think it's important. I mean, what I was hearing in terms of the establishment of the enrollment position is that in terms of the leadership question, it clearly puts a focus on a single individual,
yes.
and charges them with leadership in that area. Now, that doesn't mean that doesn't have to be support leadership from the rest of the university.
Oh.
And I think that that's something that seems to be happening more than it has recently, and with the result of what you'd expect when you do the right kinds of things, you get students to stay and your enrollment goes up.
Exactly.
Thank you, then.
Trustee Hill, I would like to piggyback on something that Dr. Westbrook's mentioned. Judy Irvin in Springfield mentioned that the leadership is there, the support is there for Chicago State. We've been meeting over the summer with President Cullerton, Speaker Madigan, Senator Maloney. They've all indicated that as long as we remain focused on recruitment, retention, Springfield will be available to support the South Side of Chicago. So they urge us to continue to focus on our recruitment and retention and trying to, you know, service the South Side of Chicago. So I just wanted to mention that as long as we remain focused and on our enrollment plan, we'll be okay mm-hmm. in Springfield.
Okay. Oh, that's good to hear. And said to Dr. Westbrook, I wanted to underscore the board's commitment and support and insistence that we can maintain that focus, and that's why I volunteered to participate in the committee.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Okay, are there any public and employee comments? Yeah, please come to the microphone and state your name.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael Johnson, and I just have a couple questions. I was unable to, elaborate on what she was stating. As a student and a client, I think the question that I have to raise are, from what she stated about the enrollment management, is there a certain assessment for that since it was accredited for 10 years? I think if, common law you can call it, if something worked in the past, it also worked in the future, correct? And if it was accredited for 10 years, what happened from 10 years to, that time slot right there? I don't know how much of what was stated about 5% being freshmen. Is that demographics correct? Is it incorrect? Or how are we as students supposed to know that? If somebody come up here and tell us the entire campus is predominantly white, that's not true, or is it false? Like, how are we supposed to be able to, you know, sit back and say, okay, is that correct or is it false? So I think that's the whole thing with everything that's been stated from last week that I heard comments about when I wasn't here. But I think as a student and as a client, like, how can we get access to the information if we can? Like, anything that's stated at that mic, you guys know the truth, probably. We don't, so about that part. I'm just gonna stroll down so everybody has questions.
Let's have him ask his questions and then.
Yeah.
The 2006 report. All these things that she spoke of, like I said, we don't have any paper or anything on a computer, the TV that's telling us, like, okay, 2006 unit report, here's everything on there. And as far as like the enrollment management, Bridge to Success, all these programs that's continuing education, she said there were no dollars towards, enrollment, but anything that's continuing education is toward enrollment at the university, period. I think we all should know that. It's the retention rates, like you stated, if students stay here, retention goes up. But what was the cause of retention?